You're listening to STP Radio.
Hi, folks. Mark Tomlinson here, back to hosting some interesting and engaging conversations with folks from the software test professionals community of awesome software testers. I'm happy to be back doing a handful of different episodes this summer because it's summertime. You know, there's nothing better to do than sit in the back of your yard or in your commute or hanging out on a weekend mowing the lawn. You could listen to these podcasts while mowing the lawn and still learning and doing things about your job, which is really great. Some of the people I'm interviewing, not all of them, will be presenting or talking at the upcoming Software Test Professionals SDPCon conference. That's September 25th through the 29th in 2017 here, towards the end of the summer. Or I guess almost the fall. I guess that's after the equinox, so that would be good. So join us there or find out more at the Software Test Professionals, softwaretestpro.com website. If you go out there /training, you can find all sorts of events, all sorts of articles and podcasts and webinars and really awesome stuff out there. Today, I got a chance to catch up with my old friend, Paul Grisoffi, about his upcoming keynote. And so here's that interview with Paul. Hey, Paul. Welcome back to STP Radio. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there. I'm very excited, actually, not just to announce the fact that you have an awesome keynote. Congratulations. Got an awesome keynote
Thank
coming
you.
Up
Thank you.
At SDPCon here in the fall. But also because this is really, it's not a straight up like automation testing. Like I know you as an automation guru and a tester. This is a very interesting topic about judgment and responsibility and some of the references you make. And so back up all the way to how did you kind of get into the idea for even wanting to talk about this way?
Well, there's still an automation facet to this. It's built around good judgment and good responsible decision making around automation, because what I've seen is this notion of the all or nothing, this notion of it must be done this way. The technical drive to get automation done because, quote, that's what we do in Agile, or because that's how we go faster. And that's not always the right way to apply the limited funds and the limited effort that we have from an organizational standpoint to get the most out of our dollars.
Yeah. And actually, it's you remember the Star Trek episode? I think it was the Samaritan. I think it's the Samaritan snare, which is the people who are the people we like things that make us go. Can you make us go?
And oh, yes.
It's a great start. It's the Next Generation. For those of you that aren't, you know, old school. It's exactly. But Next Generation, it was the you find people who just sort of blindly, we like things that make us go. We like all things must be automated. It's a very deterministic approach to this. But there's what you're going to bring to us is this idea that there should be some nuance in your thinking about judgments and the responsibility to apply that nuance. And you reference Pyrrhus. I'm going to say Pyrrhus.
That's the way I've pronounced it simply because of the term he is associated with, the Pyrrhic victory. But yes, I will introduce a couple of things from history, personal and not so personal, like Pyrrhus. And then talk about things that have happened and ask whether that was a responsible decision or responsible behavior. And then at the end, I'll tie it back to one specifically, and we'll talk a little about how we might know or not know that someone else has made a responsible decision.
Yeah. So in reference to our friend Pyrrhus, which, of course, you and I were not alive back then, at least as far as I know, unless you believe in reincarnation. It was the idea of the phrase a Pyrrhic victory means you maybe didn't use the best judgment or you were quite irresponsible in your use of troops, resources, whatever. It's not really a victory with that much loss. Can you describe the loss in this context for automation?
A lot of it has to do with wasted effort of saying, you know what, I could spend X dollars or Y effort to get this whole thing automated from end to end, or that this exact thing that I want automated. But boy, I could spend, you know, X divided by $2 and get 80% of the way, and then take those other dollars and do something else with them. Testing related, not testing related, whatever it is from the business's point of view, from the organization's point of view.
Right.
Because as ugly as it is, at the bottom of everything, we want the company to be profitable so that we can get paid. And there's other stuff there too. There's job enjoyment. There are other things. But at the core, very few of us work for free.
Yeah.
Just because we can't, right? We have to have income to live our lives and houses and food and all that other stuff. So if we can be more responsible in how we choose to apply dollars,
yeah,
perhaps we will be better off as an organization and as a product, and we can deliver things more valuably.
You know, I think there's another thing, like you talk about sort of the non-financial aspect of it from a cost-benefit perspective. The cost is also, in a qualitative sense, like I think a Pyrrhic victory as it's you the troops have been abused or dead, and you've like – if you're a complete jerk on the project, you might be right technically, but no one wants to work with you. You make a horrible work environment. The HR, maybe you're not on the HR 10 most wanted list. But that's also a way to look at it. Some people are relentless in this pursuit, very deterministic. You know, I'm not even open to hear. Have you seen people that are just so close-minded that just automation is it and no one else, don't talk about anything else?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I used to be one, you know, back 10, yeah, 15 years ago when I didn't know any better. And it takes sometimes a while to get past that. Sometimes you need some guidance. For me, it was kind of a combination of self-learning and some other people giving me guidance around business decisions. Nothing specific as far as like a course in math or anything like that, but just, hey, you know, we might be able to spend this effort better here, and maybe one tool does not fit the whole thing for the entire company of 90,000 people. Some cases it was a very logical lesson for me to learn, and others it was more difficult. I was a bit more or a lot more hard-headed in some of that. And I've become far more moderate in that, and I want to approach things as, where can we add value? And I want to play in the parts where the technology can add value, because there are other people that are better at adding the non-technology value parts.
Sure. You could call it non-engineering, but it's all kind of part of building IT systems.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The other thing that I'd like your take on is this idea of judgment and good judgment. Mm-hmm. How did you mentioned like 10 plus years ago or eons ago in the tech world that it was something, you know, you evolved and you matured in that as well. What aspects of your judgment do you think developed the most in the last few years?
I think understanding the larger context, not just from a business standpoint, but just from an organizational culture standpoint,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where organizational culture would be an umbrella over business and people and technology and everything together, and understanding that sometimes the right thing to do from a technology standpoint is to extend the technology to cover something else. And sometimes the right thing to do is to create a different technology stack or thing for other people to take care
yeah.
of. Or sometimes it's not the right thing to do is not apply technology, not throw money at it. It's have some people work together so that some other parts of it get smoothed mm-hmm. out. And then we can start talking about technology later. And it's really focused around value. Where are we going to get the most coarsely? Or bang for the buck, right. But where are we going to get the most return off of whatever we put into what we're doing right now? So if we're building software, how do we get the best value back to the company and the team, which indirectly means how do our users get the most value out of what they're giving us or paying us or what?
Or what you're building, yeah. And yes. And if you and there's those old adages, at least I would say on the development side. There was some pop. Remember those guys that say it's like it's not about building the right thing; it's about building the thing right. And you know, all
right.
There's these inverted little trick quippy things, which you yes. know are nice if you can remember them. I can never remember. But it is a development of judgment that there's more to the picture than maybe like I even started doing automation, a very narrow focused kind of automation. But it was in a life critical context, so. There, we couldn't, you know, you talk about a Pyrrhic victory, like we had to be very, very specific about what we were leaving behind if we were going to make some judgment on should I or should I not test this or test that. It was, you know, in a life critical situation, that context is very different. It's very rigorous. And you're not just thinking about, you know, we're not thinking about the bottom line or profitability. We're thinking about loss of life, which is really, really interesting that the context for your judgment can change depending on the rigor of the system or what's required of the system, right?
Have you been looking at my slides?
Yes, Paul.
I think I need a better firewall here. But yeah, no, you're absolutely 100% correct. I don't use Life Critical software as an example in the talk, but I really could have if I had thought of it. But I use a different example that ties back to some of the things I'll introduce earlier in the talk and talk about why context is important for understanding responsibility and good judgment.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, another reference that you make in here, which I think is fantastic, just going to quote unquote right from the abstract. These quests distract us from providing value while we build an unsustainable Rube Goldberg machine of automation sadness.
Yes. I have built those, right? And sometimes you build the Rube Goldberg machine because you need to. That's the right business decision. As long as you understand that the downstream maintenance of this is probably going to be higher than you want it to be.
Oh, yeah.
But if you factor that into your total cost of ownership guesstimation, it's not wrong. It's wrong to do it blindly and to wind up with a Rube Goldberg machine, right? And that's when you become
sick. Yeah. One of the things that always gets me is the idea that if I build something that that you couldn't go out and hire somebody or even train them, get on board within a couple of weeks or maybe, well, let's say a couple of weeks to do the basics, maybe a couple of months to really be able to run your automation machine of sadness.
Exactly.
But it's like, yeah, hey, we could go down that path, but you won't be able to hire anybody to maintain it. It has to be a super guru expert.
You're spot on. You are spot on. We, the bigger industry, forget about the maintenance part so often.
Yeah.
So often. And I've never worked in a real product group where I'm working on the product that's being built and delivered to the users. I've always been in the automation realm. So I don't know how frequently it happens there. But in the automation realm, maintenance and refactor and all these software-y type things, it's only recently that most people are really starting to understand that. They don't really know. They don't have the background or the experience, or they haven't spent the time in the trenches. And it's not a knock on them, right? There's two ways to do this. You either get trained or you learn on the job. And if you learn on the job, everybody just has to be prepared for mistakes and refactor. And if we're prepared for that and it fits in the financial model and the business model, great. That's a great way to do it.
Yeah.
But most organizations aren't patient enough for that.
Yeah. Let me ask you another question as well. As you've evolved in the context to, because you've been, you say you've been in hardware type testing. You've worked in just IT systems, back office systems, website systems, and several different things in your career. And then you've, like I have as well, you switched to the consulting or contracting advising role. Does that change? Did that accelerate your maturity and awareness just even in the last year or two?
I had been doing this type of thing internally for the companies I actually worked for years.
Yeah, right.
Go to a new, hey, so-and-so or wants to get involved in automation now. You go, you assess with them, you work with them. The only difference is I'm not the guy that comes in from external that has to put on nice clothes and bring a briefcase. I was just one of the employees. And
you got a briefcase? Well, you're lucky guy.
It does say Magenic on it, but it's not actually a briefcase. It's a nice little laptop bag.
I'm still a backpack kind of guy, you know.
But
you're right. The context is a little bit different.
It is.
From just like when you're full time, maybe you don't feel that, well, end date, they can get rid of me at any point. So maybe you're looking at cost benefit analysis differently.
Definitely.
The total cost of ownership, maybe a little bit more acutely when you're in that role.
Yes, absolutely. And the other thing I noticed is when you are the consultant that has come in, people want you there. They are paying some amount of money for you to be there, and they tend to listen to you more often than not. At the other jobs I've started, when I started, I was treated very much the same way. But over time, it gets to be, here comes Paul with that damn automation stuff again. Shut up, employee. Get in line. You know, you lose some of the oomph because they're used to seeing you there and you've had some successes. And well, now we know what to expect. And oh, we can do this on our own. We don't need him to come in here and tell us what to do. You know, that kind of stuff.
They see you differently in terms of, You absolutely must be giving us value. And we paid for you to be here because we don't have anyone here that knows what you know. Well, I was just saying from thinking about judgment and the responsibility you have, you might learn that more acutely if you're, you know, on billable hours in a contract situation. And I think people are quicker to assess you and get rid of you. They can be threatened by you. The dynamic changes a little bit. But oddly, I wonder if you think of this as well. Those lessons that I learned going out and doing consulting, just like you're reflecting on it now, I wish I would have known those feelings, that judgment, that assessment, when I was a full-time employee in the past. It's like, wow, that would have served me better had I taken more seriously every minute of value or thing I wrote.
And I'm expecting to be confronted with the same thing or come to the same realization as I go forward. I just haven't been doing the full-time real consulting for long enough really to kind of get that level of sea legs. But reflecting back on what you're saying, I've had the advantage of, okay, you're being brought in, like at the last company I worked at, you're being brought in as the automation manager and architect. We have 20 products. Well, you can't do them all at once. So you do an engagement on one and you learn some stuff there. You do an engagement on another one and you try to treat it the same way because it makes some financial sense. And really, orgs in the same company aren't going to be that much different. But every now and then you find one that is and you have to treat it a lot differently. I was surprised actually with one of the organizations I dealt with. I had never in any of the companies or orgs I dealt with worked with a team, a product team, where the developers, including the developer management, were not only interested in the automation, they had very strong opinions on how it should be, how it should work, what it should do, and what benefit it should bring to the table. And it wasn't always in sync with what the test team thought were the priorities there. So I came to that realization a little later than I would have liked to. And there's like, oh, shame on me. Then I had to start trying to rehabilitate that bridge between the two and between myself and them as well, so that we could start getting back on the value train.
Yeah. Well, and I you mentioned the Rube Goldberg machine of sadness. And I was like, I've been there. built an overly elaborate thing, which sought to simplify. And it did exactly the opposite. It just confused people. And I was like, all right, no matter how brilliant I think this is, it doesn't matter. Okay, so the next thing I have to ask you is the religious war that's happening in the testing circles, which is testing versus checking. What do you think, Paul? Which one?
If this is not a real word, I'm making up now. I'm more of a moderatist.
Moderate.
Yeah, so I am moderate or an appropriatist. I like appropriate.
So appropriaticity.
Yes, exactly. Yes. So if I go and talk to someone like Richard Bradshaw, I will strive very hard to use the term check when we talk about automation, when we talk about the algorithmic part of testing, those things which may be programmed, shall we say.
Sure, sure.
But when I go to another company, I am not going to correct their language and behavior if they already have something there. Because all that's going to do is stir up a bunch of noise and mess and confusion. And I don't know that specific terms matter that much as long as everyone aligns and says, this is what we call this particular thing.
Call it rutabaga if you want.
Exactly. You know, on my last engagement, they were talking about integration tests and I had a particular definition in my head. Then when they started telling me what they were doing, I went, oh, okay. I understand what you're doing. I know that as component test, but that's fine. It didn't matter. I switched over to their vocabulary, which is kind of hard, but would you agree that as a consultant, it's your job to go in and unless they're doing something dangerous, you adapt to their culture and vocabulary, right?
Yeah, yeah. Part of the assessments I do anyway were to help people understand that their language and in their ecosystem is if they try to hire people from the outside or they try to extend, and it's usually a sign that they don't send their people out to conferences or out to training, and maybe they don't have internet. I know companies that don't allow you to access the internet while you're at work. I mean, that's still a real thing, believe it or not. But they've just become insular. And it's not, like you say, it's not that they're wrong as long as you look at what they're actually doing, their behaviors, and it's benefiting getting them in the right patterns or the right practices. Cool, go. Call it rutabaga if you want. But I thought it was interesting in terms of how our industry responded to it, also from the consulting angle, which is, you know, there are people who need the versus. This was Keith Klain's thing as we're chatting. It was versus, quality versus testing versus checking and checking, which is more inclusive versus, well, what you're doing is testing. We don't need that. You don't need to spend money on that. What you need to spend money on is my services over here, Paul. We do checking. And then there's somebody on the other side of the equation saying, well, we don't do checking. We do testing. And that costs more. And so it's like this becomes this almost like this like value war versus we do both, and you should know how to do both, and you should know the difference between them.
Well, and some of the discussion has certainly inspired me to think about the difference between testing and checking, and I've kind of waffled back and forth and how I was going to apply some of those terms. If you look at some of the articles and things that I've written, I try to do things that are sort of non-side picking. I'll use different terms throughout there that I talk about testing as in the bigger umbrella term. I'll throw the word in like checker. Hey, I wrote a checker to do this thing that it's not a test case check like you would normally think, but it is doing some checking, and I think it's perfectly fine in that vocabulary to do that. I will try to homogenize between the two factions because I want people to read what I'm putting out there and to either learn from it or to give me some feedback and go, no, dude, you missed an important facet here so that I can learn as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Part of the assessments I do anyway, were to help people understand that their language and in their ecosystem is if they try to hire people from the outside or they try to extend and it's usually a sign that they don't send their people out to conferences or out to training, and maybe they don't have internet. I know companies that don't allow you to access the internet while you're at work. I mean, that's still a real thing, believe it or not. But they've just become insular. And it's not, like you say, it's not that they're wrong as long as you look at what they're actually doing, their behaviors, and it's benefiting getting them in the right patterns or the right practices. Cool, go. Call it rutabaga if you want. But I thought it was interesting in terms of how our industry responded to it, also from the consulting angle, which is, you know, there are people who need the versus. This was Keith Klain's thing as we're chatting. It was versus, quality versus testing and checking, which is more inclusive versus, well, what you're doing is testing. We don't need that. You don't need to spend money on that. What you need to spend money on is my services over here, Paul. We do checking. And then there's somebody on the other side of the equation saying, well, we don't do checking. We do testing. And that costs more. And so it's like this becomes this almost like this like value war versus we do both, and you should know how to do both, and you should know the difference between them.
I agree. And I'll hit on another point you hit on there about the you educate them that, hey, if you try to hire people, they're not going to know this vocabulary and you're going to have to train them up. I worked with a guy one time that we were doing some unit testing, but it wasn't really unit testing. It was more at the unit test level, but we would talk to some live systems just because it made sense for what we were doing. And he started talking about, well, it's not, we're not going to call that unit test. We call that functional unit test. I said, that's fine. You and I can make that vocabulary up here. But if we go somewhere and talk to people, or if you get another job somewhere else, or if we try to bring somebody in, they're not going to know what that term is. So we might want to start calling things as best we can with what the industry calls them, you know, what the de facto term is there. So you make a very, very good point about being able to talk to others that aren't part of your ecosystem. But as far as the factions of I'm doing business this way, I'm doing business that way, you know, everybody's trying to eat. So yeah. Unless it gets abusive, I don't really have a problem. Unless it gets misleading, I don't really have a problem. We start talking about tool vendors and stuff. I keep talking about this. These guys deserve to eat, right? They deserve to get paid. They need to market their stuff. They will market their stuff as, of course, it works for you because they built it to work most of the time for most people. But you're not most people. You're a single data point. You're a single person. It may not work for you as well as this other one does, or as well as this open source thing does, or as well as something you roll your own. It's a business decision based on your context, based on some knowledge, and you make that judgment based on that knowledge. Then you're being responsible, to kind of tie it back to the things we talked about earlier.
Yeah. I wonder also, you sort of, in the context or the language, again, that works for those people, or even the tools, it triggers me to think there is in the development world and in, I want to say, like the architect world, they are very, very picky about different languages, different styles and models of architectures and architectural approaches, conceptual design. They're like the sociologists of development in the architect world. And they also, like if you said unit testing and they say component testing and I say integration testing and they say string testing or who knows what, that if you have another team at your company, I suppose it's good to say, well, here's the language that you're using, and I want to be closer to the architects, and so I'm going to start kind of borrowing their language and kind of morphing it. Is that something that again, you feel free to do the language, but understand what you're doing with good judgment and be responsible for varying from the norms?
That is my general approach, but I will caveat with I can be a bit sloppy with my language, sometimes sure. Intentionally, just because I don't really feel like being that precise because I don't think it helps. And other times because I'm just trying to get a point out and then I just rush through things or something like that. So it's one of those things I work on. I try to be less sloppy in my language, but a lot of things I don't think matter simply because you can come to an understanding of what a particular word or phrase or concept means pretty quickly if you're both being diligent, or if, you know, both sides of the conversation or the discussion are being diligent about trying to come to that. And yes, there's tacit understanding and you know, I can't remember what the term is, but when everybody thinks they've or shallow agreement, you know, everyone kind of thinks they have the same thing, and you walk off and you don't. And yeah, I don't know that gets too much better with very precise terms, simply because words by their nature mean things, yeah, but they mean different things to different people.
Right. Yeah. So maybe it's you and I would agree. It's you need to understand testing. You need to understand checking. You need to probably understand why there's a war around testing and checking that has nothing to do with your job as a tester. So you don't have to participate in the war. And that probably, testing versus checking as a war in our industry, it would end up being a Pyrrhic victory.
It actually could, you know, at some point we may turn around and there may be way more dead bodies here than we would have expected or hoped, simply because we went about this in a way that perhaps wasn't the most responsible way that we could have.
Right. We should be inspiring, I think, instead of, you know. Paul, this is great to chat with you. You mentioned your blog, and it's, I believe, Responsible Automation?
Yes, responsibleautomation.wordpress.com.
.wordpress.com, so you can check that out. You can follow me on Twitter. Just look up Paul Grizzoffi, right? And of course, you're going to be at STPCon in Dulles in September near the airport. Have you been? You've been out to DC before?
I have not.
You have not. Maybe we'll sneak a group of us. We'll sneak downtown to go see the monuments in the middle of it.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, we'll have to talk about that. And then also, I will see you again at Test Bash Philly.
That's right, in November.
Yes, this will be my first Test Bash, so that will be fun.
Absolutely, people can't make it to STPCon to see you in a keynote stage. You'll be taking a full stage there at Test Bash Philly in November, so that'd be great.
Yes, which is very cool as well.
And what else is going on? I mean, they can contact you. Like, if people really wanted to hook up and maybe talk about having you come work with them, Magenic is the company you're working for, so they could actually contact you and maybe even hire you.
Absolutely, absolutely. I can That's be reached cool. at Magenic. My email for Magenic is paulg@magenic.com, or you can find me on LinkedIn, and then I can tie the two ends together or what have you. But yes, we are That's what we do. We consult, and my particular discipline is automation architecture and test leadership. I've also got some webinars and some other things coming up. If you go to my blog site, I've got my upcoming events with the links there that you can go and check out. I'm speaking tomorrow here in Plano, and then I will be in Orange County in July.
Yeah. There's the Not Your Parents Automation. Isn't that the flight return?
That one has gotten, gotten a lot of mileage.
And I have to tell to people who are listening right now, if you've not really gotten onto Paul's naming for his talks, his presentations, his blog entries, it's thoroughly entertaining.
Thank you.
I was just going to say, Not Your Parents Automation. I think the one for Tess Vashili is something about Sasquatch. I'm hunting Sasquatch.
Oh, yeah, hunting Sasquatch for periodic automation, continuous integration. Yep.
Exactly. Stupidity, more than a feeling. I mean, these are... if you go out to lunch with Paul, if you're in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, just look him up, and it's always nice to chat with you, man. And we'll see you at SCPCon, and have a great rest of the summer here.
Thanks, appreciate it, Mark. I will see you soon.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the STP Radio Podcast, and stay tuned for more episodes. You can learn more about the next STPCon conference being held outside Washington, D.C. this September 24th to the 26th, 2017, by visiting stpcon.com. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Overcast, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, or testingpodcast.com, or even find more opportunities by visiting the STP website at softwaretestpro.com, following us on Twitter at softwaretestpro. For more information about STP, just drop us an email at info@softwaretestpro.com. Thanks for listening.